Welcome to the second series of She Talks Tech from We Are Tech Women. My name is Vanessa Vallely, CEO and founder of We Are The City. In series two, we'll be bringing you more of the same. Great tech topics, emerging tech, what's going on post-COVID, from some of the industry's most fantastic speakers.
But this orange wire is that prostate cancer drug that I told you we discovered at the Institute and is now available for NHS patients.
Today we hear from the incredible Professor Bisan Al-Lazikani. Bisan is the Head of Data Science at the Institute of Cancer Research and one of our judges for Tech Women 100. Bisan applies data science and develops novel AI algorithms to help find new drugs for cancer and to optimise therapy for patients. Bisan shares her technology freely to help cancer drug discovery worldwide. During this incredible session, Bisan will discuss the success and challenges that we face in using data science in the battle against cancer.
Hi everyone, I'm absolutely delighted to be here today to talk to you about how we're using data science at the Institute of Cancer Research in London to help us find cures for cancer. Just a very brief introduction about the Institute of Cancer Research. It's actually a college of the University of London. So it's a university completely dedicated to cancer research. We do a lot of translational research, so we focus on clinical research, and we also discover our own drugs. So we have 10 drugs in clinical trials at the moment. We've got 20 drugs following right behind. And one of our drugs, abiraterone or Zytiga, was approved for prostate cancer. We discovered and developed it at the Institute and is now available to NHS patients and prostate cancer patients worldwide. So it's a very exciting place to be, and that's really why I joined the Institute of Cancer Research. But maybe if I step back and just a reminder for those of you who may not be experts in cancer. Cancer really is where our normal cells go bad. So we all have these cells that compose our bodies. In every cell, there's the DNA, which is the instructions for how to make that cell and how to make us. And when we acquire sufficient mutations or aberrations, we get a mutant cell. And if it's out of control, it can really then grow to form a tumor. And that tumor is what grows to become cancer. Now, with the revolution of the Human Genome Project and the ability to do genome sequencing at scale, we're suddenly able to really identify and understand what are these changes that are happening in cancer patients and starting to use them to really inform us in the new therapies that we're developing. And one of the great success stories we have is a gene that we call BRAF. It's a gene that encodes for an enzyme that we need to function normally in our life. But what happens with this particular gene and then the protein that it makes, which is the enzyme that functions, when you have this mutation, is that this enzyme becomes hyperactive. And through its hyperactivities, it drives the cancer in its growth. We learned this information from the cancer genome projects that have been going on, and we were able to relatively rapidly design a drug that actually binds and blocks the activity of this enzyme. And for the first time, we actually have a treatment for melanoma patients. And that's really, really fantastic news. But now I'll tell you the good news and the bad news. The great news, and this is something many people don't know, is we actually cure 50% of our cancer patients using one of the therapies that we have, whether it's surgery, radiotherapy, or chemotherapy, or drugs. But of course, that leaves the 50% of cancer patients that we currently do not know how to cure. And what's sort of more painful is that, much like you get resistance to antibiotics in bacterial infection, we get resistance to cancer drugs. So when we give the treatment to cancer patients, they may respond initially, as is sadly the case with the melanoma on that drug that I've just described. But then after a while, the cancer reemerges, and we're not very good at treating those re-emerging cancers just yet. So the challenge for us is that cancer is not just a single disease. It is really hundreds of different diseases. And these diseases then evolve into yet newer diseases over time and in response to treatment. Now, we can say, well, we get pretty good at discovering these drugs, especially when we understand the genetics. The problem is, typically, to discover one drug takes about 10 years, if not more, and costs well over £1 billion of investment. So how on earth can we afford to keep trying to make a drug for every cancer, for every patient, for every resistant phenotype of cancer that we get? if you have enough information, then there is most definitely an opportunity to think about this in terms of an informed investment. If you could bring all the right data together, you could analyze them in the right way, you can prioritize these investments as to which drugs you can follow up and try to make in a more informed way. And thus, you would reduce the amount of time and also the cost that's required to make a drug. So what are the kinds of data that we need to gather in order to make an informed decision about discovering a new cancer treatment? Well, you'd be amazed. It comes from lots of different worlds of science, of course, from genetics, but also we need a lot of information about chemistry, just hardcore chemistry, a lot of information about the 3D composition of these enzymes and these proteins that compose our bodies and that go wrong when we have cancer. And firstly, these kinds of data come from worlds that previously did not really talk to each other. And secondly, as well as being very diverse, they are vast, absolutely vast, tens of billions of experimental measurements. And so what we did coming up to 10 years ago now is actually we decided, well, can we bring these really diverse data into a single database, a single knowledge base that we can then use to develop AI algorithms that will help us make these decisions about the investments of which drugs to make. And that's precisely what we did. Our resource is called CANSAR. It contains these tens of billions of data points. We update it every day with new information because the important thing with data science, as I'm sure many of you know, is that it has to be ever-learning. You have to react to new knowledge as rapidly as possible. And we linked all of this information together, and then we developed a suite of AI algorithms that then go through these data and try to prioritize for us what are the genes that are most important to focus on and which ones of those are most likely to yield a successful drug. This is actually a protein which is involved in the growth of prostate cancer, and it's got a brother protein which looks a lot like it, which is involved in breast cancer. And you can see in there, there's like this beautifully formed little cave with this orange wire going with it. But this orange wire is that prostate cancer drug that I told you we discovered at the Institute and is now available for NHS patients. And so what we did was we actually looked at these proteins and many other successful drugs and their targets, these proteins that they bind, and tried to learn what are the features in three dimensions, in chemistry world and the physics world, that we can use in order to help us discover new proteins that would be really well suited for a new drug. And so that's what we did. So we used this information. We've analyzed millions of these little caves, little cavities on hundreds of thousands of different proteins. And we developed this really beautiful algorithm that is able to look at new proteins that we've never seen before and tell us these are the ones to focus on for drug discovery. Now, this has been so informative and so exciting for us. It's underpinning our drug discovery. And what's more, because it turns out there are so many opportunities for new drugs for cancer, we're actually making all this knowledge and all of these algorithms available to cancer researchers worldwide. We provide it through the CANSAR platform, which is an open platform available for everybody. It's being used by cancer researchers throughout the world, both in the academic sector and the industrial sector, to help making these decisions, these investment decisions, to help create new medicines for cancer, something we're very excited on and something we use all the time ourselves. So that being in hand, another thing that I'm really interested in my research is this thing. So I've talked about how the genes can inform us about what's gone wrong and how we can use this genetic information together with the AI to prioritize where to put our investment and effort in the discovery of new drugs. But it's really important to remember that a human being and a cancer patient is an awful lot more than just this DNA. There's a lot going on with us. There is, of course, the cancer DNA, but then there's also the DNA that we were born with, and there's the food that we eat. There's what other illnesses and medications we may be receiving. There's a whole bunch of information that really surrounds every individual patient. And it's the combination of this information which ultimately is what decides whether a patient is going to respond to a particular treatment and how long their treatment will emerge. So now, instead of just thinking about the DNA, we have to think about the patient as this really big, complex system of information and MRI scans and blood tests and family history and diet and exercise and diabetes medicine, all of that. And that changes over time. What the patient looks like today is going to be very different to how all this information is changing over time. And so we embarked on this really, really ambitious project to try and see whether we can start compiling all of this information to help us in the treatments. And while it's early days yet, we've got some really exciting results that are showing us that if we can only get the data together and if we can use it in a meaningful way, we can start really making a difference to patients. One of the examples I'm going to talk to you about is in this clinical trial called the CHIP trial, in this case, again, prostate cancer, though we work on many other cancers. And the problem with this is that we actually managed to cure the patients with prostate cancer, which is really fantastic in this trial, using radiotherapy. But the problem, as with many other cancer therapies, is that about 30% of our patients end up with such severe long-term side effects that really becomes debilitating and really interferes with their ability to live life normally. So the other coin of celebrating our successes and being able to cure half our patients is how do we then manage this curative thing in order not to leave our patients with these horrible side effects long term. Now, it turns out that we simply could not predict which of our patients will develop these really severe debilitating side effects. And researchers have looked, they've looked at the genetics of the patients, they've looked at the scans and the MRI scans, they've looked at the doses of radiotherapy that they received. Not a single thing could really help us predict which of these patients will develop these severe long-term side effects. And so we asked the question, well, how about if we bring them all together and map them, not just as a combination of all of this different information together, including information on how the patient feels on any specific day, but actually measure it over time. So that's exactly what we did. And that, for about 3,500 patients, gave us almost 500 million experimental measurements and scans and things that we needed to put together in order to do this. And we put them together through a series of algorithms that we've developed. And at the end, we had an algorithm that would make a prediction. We found that by putting this information together, the AI could finally start clustering and informing us about which patients will likely develop these really severe side effects. Now, that's incredibly exciting and incredibly encouraging, because what we're doing now is putting this together into a package to enable us to run a prospective clinical trial. If we can continue to prove that this really works, we'd be able to start the conversation right at the beginning with the patient. We'd be able to assess the likely risk of their developing these severe toxicities. If the risk is low, then we can increase the treatment dose in order to give them an even better chance at cure from cancer. If their risk is high, we can then start taking mitigating steps in order to help reduce the long term. Like I say, this is an early window into what's really possible for us. And we're starting to expand this kind of analysis everywhere. And one of the programs that's funded by Cancer Research UK that I'm really excited to be involved in is a national study for all kids with recurrent cancers across the devolved nations. All these kids will now be referred to us, where we analyze information about them. We put them through these systems that I've just told you about, with the idea that we'd be able to close the loop really, really quickly and inform their treatments really, really quickly. This is a long-term study, as you can imagine, but if we can demonstrate that it can really work, we think it can really change the lives of these kids with cancer, many of whom really have no options. So what do I think the world will look like? I'm an optimist by nature, but I honestly don't see a reason why we cannot live in this world where we have empowered citizens with full control of our own health data, and we get involved in our own health decisions. These powerful apps that we're using that are informing us about how we should live our lifestyles, about risk, they can become a really powerful tool to help us in tackling our own illnesses and knowing how to best communicate with the healthcare system. And on the other side, we will have empowered healthcare. I always say, if I ever get cancer, do I want just the best cancer physician in the world to treat me? Or do I want the best cancer physician in the world empowered with all the knowledge at their fingertips to treat me? And it's, of course, the latter. So I believe that AI will become just a natural part of our healthcare, that the clinician decisions will be supported and augmented by the AI, and that these AIs will have the benefit of being ever-learning systems that will tell physicians all across the country, all across the world, what to look for, what to think about, and really support them in their decisions, even in rare cases. So this isolation of seeing patients of rare diseases in isolation will no longer become a problem in the future. That's genuinely what I believe. We need to make many changes in terms of educating everybody, in terms of making very brave decisions, policy decisions as a government in order to enable this. But this is the future we should aspire to. At that, I'd like to thank my team and my collaborators, Cancer Research UK, for funding much of the work that I've just told you about, as well as many other funders who have contributed. I'd like to thank the patients who very selflessly donate their information, their samples, in order to help other patients like them.
Bisan, I honestly cannot thank you enough for being my guest on this episode of She Talks Tech. If you want to find out more about Bisan's incredible work, you can find her on LinkedIn. I thank you all for listening. You know how much we appreciate it. And we'll be back next week with another epic episode. If you like the podcast, please give us that rating. It all helps.